fraud and investment scams. As a reminder, never provide personal and or banking information via email, social media, or the phone without verifying the requester's identity. 631-852 Scam Hotline will be staffed 7 days a week from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. For information on scams, visit www.suffolkpd.org or www.fbi.gov/coronavirus.
And we're sorry they just closed, but if you call tomorrow morning, they will be happy to hear your complaint. Right now, time for new complaints. It's WUSB Stony Brook, 6 o'clock time for Off the Wall. Just start right now?
I think we can. Who, me?
Yeah. Well, we're the only ones in the room.
Well, sure.
All right. It's just that I want to jump in now because I just had a good idea and I like to share my ideas while I still have them because then I'll forget.
Well, let's go then.
We're having coffee and we have coffee from Papua New Guinea. Is that how you pronounce it? Papua New Guinea?
Papua.
Yeah, look at Papua New Guinea on a map. It's weird. It's like not Haiti and Dominican Republic. It's on like this massive island divided in half, and the other half is Indonesia, which has a lot of other islands as well, but they have half of that one. Doesn't seem fair somehow, but who am I?
There are other places like this, but it's definitely not Papa.
Well, no, it shouldn't be.
No.
See, this is what happens. I have a good idea, then I get sidetracked onto some other conversation, and I forget the idea.
Well, we were talking about the special blend. We slipped it into our grinder, and then we have some other stuff that we normally have on top.
Yeah, so it's a whole lot of coffee, and I sort of said casually, you got the United Nations of Coffee there, and I realized that's the best name ever for a coffee shop, United Nations of Coffee. That one's a freebie, but just invite us to your coffee shop and maybe give us a cup of coffee or something. And that's all. That's all it takes.
We appreciate it.
Non-commercial radio. Commercial radio would charge you for that a lot. All right? Maybe keep that in mind when Radiothon starts tomorrow, because that's how we stay on the air, by asking our dear listeners for whatever help they can provide. Just by going to WUSB.FM or calling us, 631-632-6901. But not today. Tomorrow. Well, you can do it today. It's just, it's not officially Radiothon yet.
I don't know if you've noticed my coffee mug here and my t-shirt.
Oh my God, it's a WUSB coffee mug. It's what anniversary? Be careful you don't spill it. It's the 25th anniversary coffee mug. These coffee mugs last forever. I have my 10th anniversary shirt, which I still fit into. You're wearing a USB shirt. You're kind of a USB fanatic today, aren't you?
Can you tell me what's on the back? I'll turn around.
It says WUSB 90.1 FM. Radiothon 1990, April 5th through 14th. Wow.
Okay.
That's amazing. I was just actually listening to audio from that particular radiothon not one day ago. That's pretty amazing.
Well, it wasn't exactly intentional, but I did know that we're going to be in full spring radiothon drive here.
Uh-huh.
And it's like warp drive, but better.
And this time, you listeners that like to get us for every little thing, you can't get us for it not being spring. Because by next week, well, wait a minute, it won't be spring tomorrow. All right, you can get us for a couple of days, but by next week, you won't be able to get us anymore, because it will be spring.
Consider anything now a pre-fund drive, advance participation. We're gearing up, and I don't know, maybe you split your contribution. You want to do an early contribution, then you come in later towards the end of the drive and just get one final contribution. It could be the total of $10, $5 one time, but have fun with it. The important thing is to support community radio and allow us to continue to do this thing we do here at Stony Brook.
You know how much we need to raise for this fundraiser, which will last about, I don't know, several weeks, a month maybe? $18,000. You know, other radio stations, they raise that in a day. You know, they demand that. But we don't pay anybody. We're very frugal. We just believe in radio.
And we know there's a lot of saturation.
Mm-hmm.
Don't get us wrong. We understand there's a lot of services, a lot of streaming, there's a lot of apps.
There's no comparison, Kyle. No comparison.
I really feel like that is an incredible statement that's just so true. I don't want to have to remind our listeners. I don't feel like they need reminding either. Sometimes it's just for me. I'm reminding myself.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And what I wanted to remind myself was that community radio isn't like those other services. Sure, they're on the internet. Well, we're on the airwaves as well.
Yeah.
And as soon as there's shows and stuff, you can bet that we'll be at those venues as a radio station helping to promote it. Maybe we'll broadcast from some sort of loft where you play jazz, or I don't know.
The jazz loft? Yeah.
Yeah.
Could do that.
It could be bluegrass in a barn.
The bluegrass barn?
Yeah.
Absolutely, we could do that.
Why not? Or, talk radio on a train.
Talk radio on a train. We have a special train car reserved just for that.
Easily.
The punk slam your head against the wall venue.
We've not gone anywhere. No. Don't let those other stations mm-hmm. tell you that the most dangerous station in the nation has somehow disappeared. No, we're at 90.1.
And 107.3. Don't forget 107.3, our somewhat less influential cousin.
I think you mean our super local station.
Very super local. That station exists for those people that find their signal overridden by those more powerful Connecticut stations, even though you're still in Stony Brook. That's just the nature of FM. So yeah, 90.1, 107.3.
The important thing is we're winning the war. We fought the battles, and that battle, we'll have your donations fortifying this mm-hmm. incredible institution to meet those challenges in the future. But ever will these airwaves broadcast fantastic music. So just give what you can. Celebrate another cool service, another cultural part of your everyday or your background or wherever you enjoy us. But we're happy to be here, and we need that help now.
And it's very apropos what you say, because it got me thinking. There are so many other positions on the dial. Boy, if we were this enthusiastic now, before the fundraiser, imagine how enthusiastic we're going to be during the fundraiser. but seriously, we're just talking about radio right now. We drove out east last week, and we were listening to different radio stations, because we like to do that. We're listening to our radio station as well, which is great. You know, you hear people doing shows. We actually went out in the morning, and I'm never up in the morning, so I was listening to people bantering back and forth. And technical difficulties is part of the whole thing. We heard Captain Phil talking about getting connected the same exact way we get connected, and all the little hassles, the green lights and the red lights, and the fact that we're talking to each other through distances, but it sounds like we're in the same place. Well, we're in the same place right now, but sometimes we're talking to other people in the studio or far away. And then we found the more polished stations. In fact, we went to, I don't want to pinpoint an exact station, but I will. because we went to Southampton University, which is now run by Stony Brook. Interesting story behind
that. It's a fascinating story.
Yeah, Southampton University was its own university. Then Stony Brook came and took it over. And then Stony Brook decided, you know what? This is lame. We're going to shut it down. Why buy a campus if you're just going to shut it down? I could have done that.
Not only that, a campus with an old-fashioned windmill.
Yeah, it's really, the architecture is amazing.
It's got all this quirky history that's unique to the island and new buildings. There's a lot of new buildings. They sort of built it up. There's some empty ones that need some work, but it's cool. It's a modern, it's a satellite campus, but it's coming back, I think.
But Stony Brook took over the campus, then shut it down, and then the students rose up in revolt to save the campus, and they won because the campus is now getting new life. In fact, they're going to build a hospital on it, and it's really going to become a focal point out there in Southampton, as it should.
There's already a marine sciences building that's across the street, which makes perfect sense because mm-hmm. they're on the water there with all kinds of maritime interests.
Very well thought out.
It's something that is exciting, and that's one of the cool places we visited, and their radio, transmitter site?
They used to have a really cool station called WPBX, I think is what it was called. They've gone through call letters like you go through playing cards. Then it got turned into, don't quote me on this, I think I turned to WLIU. It was when Stony Brook took over that campus, they didn't take over the radio station. That would have been really cool. We would have had a sister station out there, but they let NPR pretty much keep the radio station. But it's been bounced around. At one point it was a community station, sort of a community station. I think WPPB or something.
Was that, it was like a couple or a woman?
No, that was, you're thinking of a Montauk station.
Oh, okay.
Or maybe it was. I'm not really sure.
There is a similar story, though. I don't know if it was the same one.
You could write a book about East End Radio. But they moved their studios into Southampton Village proper.
Maybe we are.
And it was sort of like a community station. But then they sold it, and I just found this out last week, they sold it to Channel 13, you know, the PBS station. Technically, Channel 21. But Channel 21, the Long Island PBS station, is owned by Channel 13. The New York PBS station, which technically is a New Jersey PBS station, which also owns the New Jersey network, which is a whole network of PBS state. Oh boy!
Try to keep up, everyone.
I'm getting all flustered here.
Just
anyway,
yeah.
Okay. It's now called WLIW-FM. I didn't know that, and they actually have live people on in the afternoon. But they're so polished, they're so slick. They never make any mistakes. They never do anything that's rough around the edges. It just had me missing WUSB so much, and I realize we're the only station like that around. On this island, we really are. I mean, there might be a high school station somewhere, but you can only get them in a parking lot. This is something that you get throughout Suffolk County and other parts of the island as well, and sometimes Connecticut. And it's a priceless thing. It really is.
More than just another app, and we would like to be more and more available and improving. There's lots of things that we're looking forward to and catching up on as far as in-person stuff and activities with the station, as I've alluded to, so much more is possible. And we're still doing our best to broadcast regardless. And as things change, we're going to continue to inform everyone, but also share about what's going on in the community and activities and hurricanes and whatever else is coming at us. We want to be here for you.
I like how you threw hurricanes in there.
What?
That's the hurricane's going to come your way.
We have EAS. If there's a hurricane, you will get informed about it.
You know, we have EAS, Emergency Alert System, but we don't annoy you with it. What am I talking about? I'm talking about cable TV, all right? You guys, you get Altice, you know, the cable, the only cable company there is out here. Used to be called Optimum, used to be called Cablevision. They keep changing their name. I don't know why. It's like they're running from something. They keep getting bought, taken over, rebranded, whatever. But they have this super annoying trait of testing their emergency alert system. And this is not coming from a TV station. So every TV station sends a test, just like WUSB will send a test. But the cable system will send this cable-wide test. And it turns your screen blue. It usually happens about 3 in the morning.
And it pauses whenever you're watching.
It just blanks out everything. You can't get away from it. And God forbid you're watching something, you'll miss it. You will miss. If you're recording it, it'll record fine. It'll make like that test never happened.
Depending,
but if you're not recording it, you will miss it. And it just blanks out your entire screen for about a minute and a half, but then it comes back, and it keeps coming back four or five times. It is the most invasive test, you know. And there was one time where there was an actual emergency. There was a tornado alert, and they activated EAS for real, but the activation just gave you a blue screen to tell you there was an activation. Meanwhile, I was trying to watch News 12, our local cable TV news channel, that was giving information on the tornado alert, and in the middle of the report, the screen turns blue. It says, EIS alert in progress. Great, I knew that already. Now I'm not getting the information that I need because you're blanking out my screen and obliterating the actual report about something I care about. So yeah, you know, sometimes the technology just isn't quite mastered in the way that I think we would prefer.
Well, they're trying new things, and it's important, but it's still new.
So, try something else, then. That's what I say.
Right. Okay. Well, I'm adding that to my list. Fix.
You need a new notebook. Really, if that one's full.
Yes. Got it. Okay.
So we also we explored the Nazi past of Long Island when we went out east. I don't know why I sound so proud. I shouldn't sound proud. I'm proud that we found it. Not proud that Long Island had a Nazi past.
We just meandered by it. We were aware of it. We wanted to see if it actually existed, if there's any evidence of it existing. And it's the German Gardens.
German Gardens. I think the only evidence that it exists is a street called German Street or something.
Well, all the streets were renamed. Yeah. Because they were pretty bad taste.
Adolf Hitler Strauss is no longer out there. Yeah, you can't find it. It was. It existed. It was real. It actually happened in Yaphank. You folks in Yaphank, you know what I'm talking about. But there was a place called Camp Siegfried. It was a summer camp, and it actually taught Nazi ideology. And it was in Yaphank. And it was owned by the German-American Bund, which was an American Nazi organization devoted to promoting a favorable view of Nazi Germany, and it was operated by the German-American Settlement League, known as the GASL. And guess what? They still existed. Like, I think they might even still exist.
Yeah, they're remnants of some of these organizations.
Yeah, they own land out there. Basically, people own houses in that community, but the German-American Settlement League owns land. And what happened, this actually took place, I think, back in 2015, so it's not that long ago, where a couple were looking to sell their home, and there was a clause in the bylaws of the community that required the homeowners of any new purchaser of a home to be primarily of German extraction. Yeah, that was in the bylaws. And so they took them to court in central Islip. Now, the couple that took them to court, they were both of German descent. That's how they got into the neighborhood. And they agreed in 1999 to enter the community under those rules. But they since became a little troubled by this, realizing, hey, it's a 21st century, and we're still being told that we have to only sell to Germans here on Long Island. They were the Neers. Mr. Neer said, "You feel like a caged animal here. It's terrible for everyone, for the kids, for us, even for our dogs, who technically are caged animals." So their complaint included, part of the history, photographs of a rally in the 1930s of the Italian black shirts, supporters of Benito Mussolini, that occurred a short walk from their yard. There are all kinds of history out there. And eventually it wound up where they lost in court, the German-American Settlement League lost in court, and they were actually defending this practice. They were forced to start selling to people who were not German on German Street. I believe it's German Street or German Boulevard or German Avenue or something German out there. Yeah, it kind of violates the Fair Housing Act, just a little bit. So Camp Siegfried and German housing developments is part of our history. We should know about it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all around us, this change and transformation throughout time, that different areas, and we don't realize often the little bits of history and little clues along the way that you can realize what built an area and what influences pulled and pushed it and molded it into the way it is now. Mm-hmm. And I think that's instructive and important, so that our understanding is such that we're not looking at things as beyond questioning, right? And it's good to have that kind of critical thinking going forward, and understanding how that history still resonates, still influences, even in the last half dozen years. It's making it hard for people to sell a home for silly stuff that doesn't really comport with the rest of our community standards these days.
Yeah, and of course, racism has been a part of our culture everywhere, especially in the housing world, where black families are shown one house, white families are shown another, and that still goes on today. Here, there, all over the place. We have to call it out. This is just a little bit surprising because it was so blatant and so ugly. But it was there, and there are remnants. There are always remnants. You can find them just by exploring a little bit. What else did we do? We explored the Shinnecock area a bit, the Shinnecock Canal. That's an awfully nice part of Long Island. Just basically explored the north and the south a little bit.
Yeah, drive any way you can and just see what activity is going on. A lot of little parks and small open spaces that are getting rehabilitated and basically ready, I guess, for the tourist season and the warmer weather. So a place where they created a lot for visitors and various parks. There's so many different little parks out, specifically in Brookhaven and out in these different areas on the east, north and south fork. We went down to what was the beach community that on the south shore?
Beach community on the south shore. Oh yeah, Quag, was it?
Yeah,
West Hampton Beach. Quag. Yeah, we drove on Dune Road, which I've never done before. Dune Road, I always read about having flooded because people are stupid enough to build their homes right on the ocean, and every time there's a storm, we hear about their plight.
It's not like a normal, ordinary place where we would go and hang out. And it looked a little,
it looked lonely. There was nobody there. Only people maintaining the homes of the people who weren't there. And it's not even the real Hamptons. It's West Hampton. It's the poorer relative of the Hamptons. But it's where you go to show off that you have a place on the beach that gets flooded every time there's a storm.
Yeah, there's a lot of flood signs and all of the places have to be raised, as is quite common with beach houses.
We saw a huge house being moved.
There was one that was being moved inland, so it was up on, they had all kinds of square ties stacked so that they could get I-beams, and then they were going to roll, I guess, the house and shift it in towards the road
from
the beach.
This was a big house. It wasn't a tiny house. And they're going to have to do that again in about 50 years, probably.
It was amazing to see that. And just the lengths that people go to. But a lot of places just kind of neglected, and it's a little depressing, I don't know, to mm-hmm. to look at some of it. So a lot of it is sprawling and modern.
Well,
and
yeah, most of it is new architecture because people who had houses there a long time ago no longer have houses that exist. Only a few stone structures that obviously were older, but not very many of those.
Yeah, it was hard to tell what styles, what was actually sort of quote unquote original, or what's just been built on top of other things. And of course it's a beach, it's a coastline, it's on the water, and it is incredibly corrosive. So there's a lot of rust and things need to be maintained. So it was kind of interesting to see how people get on in such a exposed area there along the water, like with flooding.
My favorite part was where there were no houses. It was just seagrass and sand and things like that. And one road. And you felt you're in nature, and that's how it should be. And then, you know, if you go a little further west, there's all this development. That's constantly in a state of repair. It's not the way to do it, I don't think.
Yeah, surely interesting. A little bit of activity out there, and it was interesting to see the ports, where the fishing boats and other maritime activities are. There's, I think, commercial docks, and then I think there's one with the Shinnecock, I think, has a dock there. There's all kinds of different fishing resources right there, and you just imagine these people go way off, you know, a fair amount from shore and come back with all this seafood and stuff.
And the Coast Guard is there ready to catch smugglers. They had a big facility.
Yeah, the Coast Guard is it's a really big part there. And then, of course, all the marine science stuff. So it was a fun weekend trip. I think that's a lot of what folks are doing these days, is exploring their surroundings and trying to get out there. We tried to take note, really, of just see who was out and, like, if are people active, you know, what's going on out and around, you know, are there businesses open? And people are really gracious, I found. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think everywhere we went, it didn't seem like there was a lot of activity.
They're happy to see you.
But you definitely, like, if you go get a snack or you you know, buy some gift or something while you're out, people definitely are happy to see any kind of visitors. So I think that's going to grow, and it's going to be interesting to see how it evolves over the spring.
Well, I mean, yeah, of course, people are wearing their masks and keeping their distance, as we need to do until we reach the herd immunity of people getting vaccinated. But it's once you get past that, it's you know, it means a lot for you to be out there showing your support, supporting local businesses.
We even saw a really tiny, tiny clinic that was doing their own vaccination mm-hmm. program out there. So
yeah, it's all over.
All of this in leisure is with that in the background. Even when you're out exploring or walking in a park, yes, you're going to be near some places that have traffic diversions and are trying to get people in and out so that we can all be a little healthier.
Yeah, and I've gotten my first shot. My next one will be in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, a lot of people are getting them. I think that AstraZeneca one.
No, not that one.
I don't
one.
Know
not
if
that
I
one.
Want that one.
that's the one that everyone's picking on right now.
I've been hearing and it's...
I want to defend it. I want to stand up for it. But then again, I don't really want to that much.
I just know in the weeks past it said, like, you know, oh, I'll take what I... You know, now I'm hearing some things.
Yeah. There's four other ones you can take, so maybe you can skip that one. I don't know. It's not really in this country anyway. But if you're having, you know, actually the New York State system, as of last night, they changed their software. I've been helping dozens of people get appointments through the old system, and now they've changed it.
Yeah, what's the latest?
Oh, my God, it's such a pain in the ass now. What you have to do is for every request that you make, and keep in mind, you might have to make a couple hundred requests before you actually get an appointment. Well, instead of being able to just have something constantly refreshing a page, you have to click a little box that says you're not a robot. And even though you've just clicked that box that says you're not a robot, it doesn't believe you. It gives you a capture image. You know what that is? It's basically just a picture, a bunch of pictures, and you have to click all the ones that fit a particular criteria. In case maybe like traffic lights. Every picture has a traffic light. Every picture that has a fire hydrant. And I don't know what it is. I always get into arguments with these things because it's open to interpretation. For instance, one of the ones I saw, click on all pictures that have a hill in them, a hill or a mountain. Well, what is a hill? A hill is a slight elevation. You know, if you show me a picture of a street, it's not going to be flat. There's going to be a hill. So I click on that. No, that's wrong. It's not wrong. There was a hill there. It's a tiny hill, but it's a hill. I just keep, how about this? Click on where there's a crosswalk. Well, okay, I see the car parked on top of the crosswalk. You can't see the crosswalk, but you know it's there. Do you click on it or don't you? I'll leave that one as an exercise for the listener. But I just get into these massive arguments, and then I have to try again, and just all this time is wasted. But for every request now, you have to go through that. So, you know, you can't automate the process. You have to do a whole lot of clicking. It hasn't made it any easier for people that don't have technical abilities. But it's made it a lot harder for people who do have technical abilities to help those people. So the only positive part about all this is that there are more vaccines available. So you might have less of a hard time going online and actually finding an appointment now, and it'll get better. But it's frustrating. It's frustrating, and I'm not sure that was actually necessary to do that. But here's something interesting that I saw pop up on our news feed. The one question you should never ask others about their COVID-19 vaccine. Now, chances are you've seen some coworkers, family members, or friends posting on social media about getting the COVID-19 vaccine, and you've likely cheered them on from afar. But if you're one of the many still patiently waiting to become eligible for the vaccine, and you see that a seemingly healthy friend or coworker around your age or younger gets vaccinated before you do, it may be tempting to ask, how are you able to get it before me? But experts say, in general, it's better to keep that question to yourself. Now, there's a few reasons that someone might get vaccinated earlier than you'd expect, including something as simple as where they live. States across the country are in different phases of the vaccine rollout right now. But people have health conditions that they may not want to broadcast. People have cancer. They have organ transplants. They have autoimmune system problems. They have all kinds of potential issues. And if you just barge in there and say, hey, what gives? How did you get the vaccine? You know, you're basically demanding that somebody tell you some of their innermost private health issues. And that's a bit of an intrusion. I realize a lot of people probably don't realize that when they're asking. But, you know, let the person tell you. If they want to tell you, they will. The thing to remember is that cheating is something that doesn't really work out because, you know, you do have to talk to somebody on site. You do have to show evidence that you qualify. And if you don't have that evidence or if it's forged or something like that, it's going to be an unpleasant conversation. So let's assume that that is being followed and that the people that we know are being honorable and that we're all going to wait our turns and, you know, get our vaccine when it's time. I've talked about it publicly. I've got asthma, which I got from the NYPD during the RNC in 2004. Thank you very much, cops. Now that got me qualified early. But other people might not be so forthcoming, and they shouldn't feel the need to be.
Yeah, I don't want to talk to people about why what I'm planning or how I'm going to deal with it. If you want to, that's your choice. But I shouldn't have to, like, defend why I'm not pursuing it right away. You know, like I'm getting advice from Dr. Instagram, and
Dr.
he's getting
Instagram?
Me, yeah, and he's getting me the fake Sputnik. I mean, it's cheap, but that's what I'm waiting for. So what happens if you start questioning my doctor's ability to diagnose my condition?
No, I'm going to start questioning your doctor's ability to diagnose because you're not talking to a real doctor there. There are all kinds of myths that you can fall prey to if you're not careful. Anti-vaxxers, we are going to challenge you. And if you're telling other people that the vaccine is something you should avoid, that's a very serious health issue that you're embarking upon.
No, it's true. And I, in seriousness, don't, I just don't want to be bothered to, or pestered about it. And it's like having to get into something that really isn't anyone's business. Mm-hmm. And as you said, it's like, it's assuming that someone is up to something, or all of a sudden it's not on us to police others and how they handle it. Their physicians are responsible for the kinds of reasons they're giving. So you have to assume that is, as you said, that is being checked on the way to getting the actual injection. So it's not for you to police. You may be curious,
right,
but you are kind of stepping into something. But I would argue, even people who haven't got the vaccine, why haven't you? I mean, maybe that isn't any of your business either.
No, you're right. You're right.
Opposite.
Yeah.
I don't want to be pestered about why I haven't. Maybe I'm not old enough.
Well,
maybe
no, hold
I'm
on,
not
hold on.
Eligible.
How about why you won't? Can we talk about why you won't get the vaccine? Is that a conversation that doesn't? I mean, I think that's fair game, because if you're refusing to get the vaccine, that means you're probably telling other people they shouldn't get the vaccine as well. And you might be basing everything on false beliefs. You know, just yesterday I saw a figure that said something like 45% of Republicans are not going to get the vaccine. That's insane. That's insane because this is not a political issue. And it shouldn't be a political issue. And in fact, you know, your God, Trump, even got the vaccine, didn't tell anybody for some reason, but he got the vaccine. So obviously people are taking care of themselves and they couldn't care less about their followers. But all that doesn't matter. The science, that's all that matters. You know, we've eradicated diseases like smallpox in the past because of the science. We control polio because of the science. We fight the flu every year, you know, and it's all based on scientific evidence. So this is real. This is happening. We've lost well over 500,000 of our own citizens, most of which could have been avoided. But we won't get into that right now. The important thing is to stop it before it gets even worse. And of course, there's the whole rest of the world too. A lot of which doesn't have access to what we have access to. So it's especially insulting if you have access and you qualify for you to refuse it and risk your health and those of the people around you. I mean, words fail me.
Yeah, definitely. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about people saying, why haven't you gotten it yet? As though you're not trying. And it's like, from what height of privilege are you speaking that you're questioning someone as to their willingness or their sense of urgency? You don't know their situation. Maybe they don't have a medical reason, or they're not eligible, and you're assuming they're older or something than they are. Imagine how insulting that is. Encourage people. Yes, talk about it. Yes, and if someone is talking about how they won't do something, certainly there's a discussion there that at some point needs to be confronted or aired. But to, you know, question whether it's someone's even tried, or to find out, you know, exactly what they're using as their reason is it's silly and it's beside the point.
Yeah, there's all kinds of faux pas that you can engage in with this. The important thing is to know when your time has come. That sounds ominous.
Just ask how they're doing.
Know when you qualify. By the way, you know, there are a lot of comorbidities and medical conditions you might not know you apply for. For instance, if you have a kid with ADHD, is that the right phrase?
Yeah.
You qualify, or he or she qualifies, no matter the age.
Or they.
Yeah, or they. It's basically something I didn't even know about. So look into that as well. Look at all the sites. And pharmacies, I think, are still doing 60-plus or 65-plus, but the New York State sites and New York City sites are doing all ages that qualify.
If you have a story about your vaccination or your ability or lack thereof using their website as it's been changed, please write us, otw at 2600.com. We'll read your letter and share as much as we can about this process.
Oh, the film projector has been turned on. The piano is being played.
Yeah, what do you think of the paint job?
That means, very nice, smells though. Films of the Year That Was, our weekly feature, is now upon us yet again. And this is an unusual week because we're covering 2 years. Half of 1993 and half of 1994.
So what year is it?
Well, I guess we start with the foreign film from 1993.
Okay, so that's Belle Epoque.
Yeah, we saw that about a week ago, so I kind of forget a lot of that. That had to do with, it was Spanish.
It's directed by Fernando Tribe.
That doesn't help.
Tribe. It's a comedy.
Comedy. Oh, this is the one about the sisters. Okay, yeah. Okay, it's during the Spanish Revolution, I believe, before Franco gets put into power.
Right.
And so they don't know the horrors that are ahead of them, but they're fighting an old regime, and they're all positive and optimistic about that. But this guy is a deserter, and he winds up in some neighborhood in some old guy's house. This guy is friendly to him, and then for some reason, all four of this guy's daughters come home on the train, and one by one, this deserter guy falls in love with each of them. It's Yeah, I can see why I might have forgotten that.
It's a comedy, yes.
Is it, though? Is it really a comedy? I'm not sure it is.
Okay, it's a tragic love quadrant.
It's a relic. It's a relic is what it is.
Polygon, a love polygon of sorts.
Misogynistic. Yeah.
It's pretty off. No, I mean,
I wouldn't say it's awful. I would say it's terrible.
It was interesting. Father of the daughter, his wife is an opera singer, and there's a cuckold sort of love triangle between him and her manager eventually find out about. So there's like two layers of love interest going on, and the soldier who had befriended the older gentleman at the station, their friendship, I guess, parts because he becomes so infatuated with his daughters, and that was one of the lines that the father used, that he gains a son-in-law but loses a friend.
Yeah.
So he helped him and picked him up, had him under his wing a bit, sort of, when he lands at the station. Then they just kind of... he bounces around, kind of like a pinball, just bouncing between all these.
Yeah, he sure does. But there's one in particular that's kind of interesting. Daughter they referred to as a guy, you know, because this was a daughter that I think the mother wanted to be a son. And so she raised the daughter as a son. And then that daughter turned into a lesbian. That's not really how it works. But that's how it worked in the film, and so she was off limits because of that.
It was Violetta.
Violetta, yeah, yes. Okay. So that's one of the four,
and eventually he falls in love with Luz.
Luz,
and that is the youngest sort of pure, innocent daughter, played by Penelope Cruz.
Oh, really?
And it is one of her early films. And interestingly, she did not know Spanish prior to this, or had not been Spanish speaking in her career.
How did she get onto the Spanish film set then?
And learned this exactly.
It was in Spain. I mean, you shouldn't. You have a Spanish last name.
No, she was just, I think, early in her career beginning, and that was a role that she learned the language for, and I think was compelling, really. You see how he eventually is like really passionate about the relationship with her, but it's a little hard to believe the depths of it, because his puppy love seems to be consummate. Uh-huh. And he just doesn't stop, and eventually I guess they marry, right?
I think that's what happened. I was sort of dozing off at that point, but all the chasing around and everybody seemed to be happy in the end. So, you know, I can live with that. The thing that bugged me, though, was he was leaving right when the four daughters were arriving by train, and he was supposed to be taking the train to Madrid, I believe,
yeah,
which was the same train. And then he came back to the house and said he missed the train. He was there when the train showed up. He even met the daughters as they got off the train. All he had to do was step onto that damn train.
No,
he couldn't even manage that.
He was smitten because he was looking at Luz.
He was smitten. He just saw them for the first time.
She was gracing him with a glance, and he was completely beside himself, infatuated.
Wait, wasn't Luz the one he was staying away from until the very end?
Correct.
Because otherwise you don't have a film.
But she made eye contact with him.
Oh.
And I think also, wasn't she the one in the upstairs window that invites him in?
You know,
I
couldn't tell the difference at some point. There were just all these, like, you know, giggling girls and the Spanish language. It's hard for me to tell the
difference. Early on when he shows up, she invites him in first.
Okay.
But he then bounces all over the place. And then eventually they marry. Okay, next film.
Yeah. Wait, what's the name of that one again? And in English, too, if there's an English translation.
Oh, sure. This film is Belle Époque.
Does it not say what the English name is? No.
The Beautiful Arrow.
The Beautiful Arrow? That's what it's called?
I'm sorry. I don't mean to get breathy. The title does not derive from the French history. I don't know. I think it's...
You know what? Look it up yourself.
Beautiful era is what it's referring to.
Beautiful era or arrow? I'm not sure which you're saying.
Era. E-R-A.
Okay. Okay.
Epoch.
Has era. Not to do with the Equal Rights Amendment in any way, apparently.
No.
That was 1993, the best foreign film, according to the Academy Award people. Really?
Check it out.
I think you could have found better.
It was all right.
Yeah. Okay, so now, remember, the last film we saw in the American best Oscar-winning film in 1993 was Schindler's List. So, naturally, the appropriate follow-up to Schindler's List... In 1994, it's Forrest Gump. Yeah, quite a change in direction.
Yes, Le Gump Forrest.
Yeah, except, you know, I have to say, when I saw that, I rolled my eyes right back into my head. But when we saw it, it's a pretty good film. It really is a pretty good film, pretty touching, and certainly shows all sorts of... I'm sorry, that's an alert that I have to keep privy to. So it basically showed America going through all kinds of eras, periods, historical moments through this one character. And special effects, wow, they were pretty impressive. You know, talking to Kennedy and Johnson and things like that. I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah, they cleverly, he appears, that being Forrest, played by Tom Hanks, of course, appears in the background or in subtle ways at these key historical milestones, and he lends his participation or weaves it into his own identity and story as he's recounting, really just sitting at a bus stop waiting for a bus. That's what he's doing. He's telling a story at a bus stop.
He sure is.
And it starts with this feather.
Okay, but that kind of bothered me, because here he is, from most of the film, telling the story. He's on his way to see the love of his life, and he's sitting there for a long time, has to be over an hour, telling the story to not one person, but a bunch of people, because they keep coming and going. So several buses must have gone by, and he, you know, if you're in a real hurry or are eager to see this person after so many years... Why are you sitting at a bus station within walking distance, by the way, of your destination, telling the story over and over or just continuing this very long story? That just bugged me right there. And then, obviously, he gets to the point of going to the place that he wants to go to, and then the story continues from there. And I believe he starts narrating again from some other point. So it's a little bit, you get a little seasick with that, but... It's a good story. It's a good story, well told. You do get a little tired of the delivery after a while. You might get tired of it after a minute, but it's a good story, and I think that's what counts. That's why it won, because it's an epic. You know, epics tend to win Academy Awards because they don't just tell a story; they tell a number of stories over a long period of time. And that's something that doesn't come along every day.
That's right. And also in this film is Robin Wright and Sally Field, many other actors that you might be familiar with. And it's a really, really well-known.
Should probably mention Tom Hanks too.
Yeah, I did.
Oh, you did. Okay.
Yeah, Tom Hanks is in it. And of course the Vietnam scenes and others are really these big parts of history. And I don't know the overarching themes and what grabs you. What do you think they're trying to say?
I'll say this: one of the themes or recurring events are people getting shot, celebrities getting shot. Every, you know, John F. Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy, even George Wallace, and of course John Lennon. The story keeps pausing to show these moments in history. So I think there's a commentary there about this issue with violence, with guns, with assassinations that America seems to have. And I think that's it's a pretty strong commentary, seeing all that lined up one after the other, contained within this massive story.
That's interesting. I didn't pick that up as much, and it sort of strikes me that he barrels just haplessly is in these situations, and that the story, the simple story of living a life of falling in love, of having a family, is just occurring around all of this tumult, all of this craziness, and will endure in that way, that life does sort of go on, life, and that these moments that we may not, that we take for granted, are occurring in the process of history, and maybe to be able to step back every now and then and appreciate where you are and what you're doing in the moment, but also where life has taken you, how you've arrived there, and in one piece, and finding some happiness in life.
Absolutely. Forrest Gump, the winner for 1994, and I guess next we'll see the foreign winner for 1994 and move on through the 90s. Into the 21st century, and eventually the present. Wow, it is fun. It is fun seeing these moments in history, because you remember certain things. We're getting to the part where I think we've both seen the films already, most of them.
I was thinking about that today because I knew we would be speaking about some of the films, and I can safely say these are an era. It's the type of movies that maybe I have watched them, maybe I haven't. How do you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because you could ask me about these films and I could probably say as much, whether I'd seen it in the last week or not.
Right.
Because they were impressed upon me, and maybe the juggernaut of promotion and ads and merchandising and the craziness of all of that makes that industry and so forth was becoming ever more powerful at the time. And so, there were, I don't know if there was a Forrest Gump lunchbox, but
of course there was.
These things, I will watch all the films. I'm not going to sit here and not have watched them. And it is, in all seriousness, the most important and beautiful part is remembering how I watch them. Like Schindler's List was definitely on a 4x3 set
in a classroom
with a VHS tape over like 4 days.
But I suspect their class didn't show Forrest Gump the next year.
No. And I think it was a social studies class, maybe English. I'm not sure which. We were writing about it, discussing it as a class. And of course, Forrest Gump too, there's no way I would have seen it. I may have seen it in a theater, but these are the things that you forget. You know the story, and it was impressed upon you, and that's vivid. But the details of how you came to see it, and this is early in my film cinematic viewing experience as an American consuming that, it's a fascinating thing to remember for yourself.
What's also interesting to me is just all the references to these films that we see today. You know, invariably we see a film and then the next day somebody on TV or somewhere makes a reference that we had just seen.
It's happening, but we've been doing this long enough that maybe we're putting enough out in the ether that, Clarice, what is that, the new Silence of the Lambs remake?
We saw Silence of the Lambs, and the next day we heard about this new TV show called Clarice that has to do with that realm.
The very week we were watching it.
But one of the weirdest things was when we saw the Russian version of War and Peace. Actually, is there any other version? Back from the 60s. And it's a huge, long film, like 6 hours long. But there was a part of it where I just heard sound. And I realized to myself, oh, my God, that sound was used in Revolution 9 by the Beatles. What are the odds of hearing that? I don't think anyone else picked that up because it's there. You hear a certain part and it's, wow, that is the exact sound they used. And it makes sense because that film came out then. They must have watched it. John Lennon must have said, hey, this is cool. Recorded it, put it on the White Album, and the rest is history.
That's one of my favorite parts about this is recontextualizes it for making new memories about this artifact of culture we're diving into every week.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and it's, I'm glad we are. I'm really glad we're doing this.
Yeah, this also, you notice new little things. It comes up. You see references, as you said. It's a fun project, and we have lots and lots of time to go through. And there's lots of other genres of cinema to enjoy. This is just a taste of it.
Hey, the COVID-19 relief bill signed?
Yeah, I heard it passed.
Oh, it passed, all right. Without a single Republican vote.
It was bipartisan,
vote.
Right?
Not at all. Oh. No, our Lee Zeldin did not vote for it.
Shucks.
So when you get those checks in the mail, he didn't want you to have that. Didn't want businesses to recover, at least not through a Democrat's pen. But overall, I think it was a really strong week for Democrats as far as getting something done. And I hope it's, you know, it portends well for the future that, they'll work with Republicans, but if Republicans refuse to cooperate, I'll get it done anyway. You know, this is being seen as something really, really historical on the verge of, the New Deal or something like that. It's history we're living through.
Yeah, and there's so many little parts of this that I see the leadership actually caring about. And one thing, when we were driving around, we saw utility trucks everywhere. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of stuff being fixed, no doubt, because people are relying on that stuff a lot. But all those little details add up. So we need more utility. We need more of our roads and all the little things that people rely on when we're out enjoying our communities. It's got to get maintained. And this bill's a small part of that.
We're going to head on out of here. Finn is up next. Please keep listening to WUSB. Remember, Radiothon starts tomorrow. And we'll be back next week with all kinds of fun stuff as well. Write to us, otw@2600.com. You'll be glad you did.
Support Radiothon.
Have a good night.
So long.
Yeah, kids, Finn's Revolution with you until the 9 p.m. hour right here on WUSB Stony Brook. I'd like to thank the Fun Boy 2 for playing the Fun Boy 3 there. But tonight on the show, it's going to be ladies, ladies, ladies. I think tonight we'll concentrate on singers, maybe an instrumental or two. Let's see what happens. Happy Women's History Month.